Jesus used many other stories when he spoke to the people. And he taught them as much as they could understand. He did not tell them anything without using stories. But when he was alone with his disciples, he explained everything to them.
Several years ago, a gentleman named Harry took residence in a new house, a classical and historic mansion that he had worked very hard for. After moving in, however, the house quickly began to show signs of structural problems. Chandeliers were swinging, floors were shaking as they walked, and the floor sagged and moved, quote, like a ship at sea. Once when Harry's daughters were playing the piano, one of the legs broke right through the floor. And another time, while Harry was bathing upstairs, the floor shifted, and he and the tub almost fell through to the first floor, where his wife was hosting a large party for a women's group. Finally, the house was thoroughly examined, and as one man said, it was staying up from force of habit only. The commissioner of public buildings said the house would not pass the safety standard of any city in the entire country. One of the main reasons for the problems had to do with the fact the house was built on an extremely unstable foundation, causing the walls to shift, which compromised everything else in the house. It took a long time for everyone to decide what to do. Should they just build a new building in a completely different location? Maybe they should break down the old house completely and build a new one on top? Or should they leave the historic facade of this building in place and basically build a new structure around and within it? Finally, it was decided the walls of this historic mansion would remain, but the rest of the house would be gutted and the new foundations and steel structural beams put in. Now, Harry and his family moved across the street to temporary housing while the repairs began. Steel beams had to be installed throughout. New foundations had to be built as foot by foot of concrete was poured. And to shore up the stone walls that had stood on clay for all those years, 126 pits were dug, and they were dug an extra 22 feet deeper than the original foundation. And they were filled with reinforced concrete, and then a steel structural framework with its feet in those pits was erected within the walls. And finally, the house was declared livable, and a joyous Harry moved back in. The year was 1952, and Harry S. Truman, the 33rd president of the United States, was able to safely move back into the White House. Now, today we're going to talk about foundations, but first let me introduce myself. My name is Don Stewart, and I'm one of the elders here. I'm the oldest elder in more ways than one. I'm literally the oldest elder here. And I'm also kind of the oldest, been around kind of the longest. My wife and I moved to Indianapolis in 1996, and we joined Friendship Baptist Church, which was meeting in Craig Park in the community center up the street. And then we moved services up the street to an elementary school for a little while. And then Friendship Baptist Church purchased the plot of land that we're on right now. And I remember standing out here, it was a few crops, but it was mostly just dirt and some old grass. And I remember standing in a circle with those original people praying over the church and praying for spiritual foundations of what God would do here. And then we built physical foundations. We built the building that is attached to us right next door. And then years later, as things changed, I was part of calling the Crandalls to come here with us. And we spent months then building new foundations as well for Friendship Church. And as many of you have been able to witness over the last year or so, we've been able to see new physical foundations put in and a new building put in that we're in right now. So I have been very blessed to be a part of many things and watch so much that God has done here. It's been very exciting for me to be part of that. So if you're a guest here this morning, you've already probably figured out I'm not the senior pastor. Our senior pastor, Dave Crandall, is on a well-deserved vacation. And I believe we actually have a picture of him on vacation. Is that true, guys? That is our illustrious senior pastor, David Crandall. So pictures like, when you've been around as long as I have, you get a lot of ammo. And it's pictures like that will guarantee I'll probably never get asked to speak again. So I've learned quite a bit from Pastor Dave. First, obviously, is how not to pose for a vacation picture. That's probably the main thing I've learned. I have also learned to use alliteration when you're speaking. And you guys know what alliteration is. It's when you're using the same letter, the same sound repeatedly in a sentence or in your message to drive home a point. So today is going to be D-Day, right? Just like when the Allies stormed the beaches and it was a turning point in World War II in Europe. I'm going to call today D-Day for a lot of reasons. Okay, I'm a Don. I am a director at work. That's my title. I'm a dad. My kids are here. I'm a drummer, right? And so you're going to have to bear with me a little bit. I have a hard time standing still. I think that's the reason they made me a drummer. They stick me in there. I can wiggle my hands and feet, but I can't go anywhere, okay? They've turned me loose up here today, so I'm sorry if I make you dizzy, but I'm going to be going back and forth a little bit. But we're going to do, we're going to call today D-Day, and I asked my wife as well. I said, what are some D words that could describe me? And she came up with dedicated and, ready? Dapper. So, 1,000 bonus points to my beautiful wife, Amy, and we get to go out to eat wherever she wants today. So, thank you for that. Now, before we jump right into the scripture, and we have two main ones from Matthew and Luke, first I want to talk about the context, okay? Context is critical when we're reading the Bible. It's very important to understand something about it. Now, many of you know, for about 16 years, I worked for a company here in Indianapolis called Interactive Intelligence, a large global company. Once a year, they just had it a couple months ago, they have a large conference. People come in from all over the world, literally like 40 countries. People come from 40 countries. And they sit in these sessions all week long, and they learn all this information about the company. But there's one session that there's no other sessions going on at the same time. There's nobody out in the hall. Everybody's inside. And it's when the CEO and founder, Don Brown, I always did like that guy. He's got a great name. Don Brown tells everybody, this is what you need to know about interactive intelligence. We've listened to all these seminars. You've gotten all this information. But here's the most important thing. Before you get back on your planes and in your cars and go back, here's what you need to know about the company. It's the keynote address. It's his keynote point. Well, the passage we're talking about with the two builders, this is from the Sermon on the Mount. The Sermon on the Mount is Jesus' most famous sermon. It is the longest recorded sermon ever from Jesus. It takes up Matthew chapters 5, 6, and 7, three entire chapters in the Gospel of Matthew. Okay, so it's very critical. We get the Beatitudes are from that. The Lord's Prayer is in that. It's some of the most quoted sections. And so now we've got the most amazing, most incredible person who's ever walked the earth, Jesus Christ, in his best and longest recorded sermon, right? And he gets to the very end. And what does he choose to talk about? You would think he's summing all this stuff up. He's going to talk about heaven or hell, maybe. How about grace? How about love or forgiveness? These are the things he wants to hammer home before he sends everybody home. And he chooses to talk about two builders, two foundations, two homes. You ever think about why would he take that last moment before he sends them home and sends them off, sends the crowds away? He says, this is what I want you to get. This is what I really want you to understand. Now, I think I understand that a little bit as I think about our culture. We're obsessed with our homes, aren't we? We love our homes. We remodel them. We take pictures of them. We post it on Pinterest. We do all kinds of things. We love inviting people over, see the work we've done. We show them some of the stuff we've done on our home. We have magazines dedicated to it, and YouTube channels, and websites, and radio programs, and TV, right? We got a lot of TV dedicated to our homes. I remember one from several years ago. How many of you remember Extreme Makeover Home Edition? Anybody remember that? Yeah, that was a great one. We were enthralled to watch these houses of these people that just seemed to live in just really rough situations and watch them get transformed into these amazing new houses. And that was one of the most popular shows at the time. It was very, very popular. And we have an entire channel, HGTV, dedicated full-time to our houses. That's how important it is to us, right? And I don't have cable, actually. Is that 24/7 HGTV? Anybody know? Is that 24/7? Okay, I'm going to say it is. I'm not hearing anybody say for sure. So, yeah, 24/7. That's what I'm saying right now. HGTV is on. We've got a lot of it dedicated to that. I don't have cable, but I had to look up some of these shows, and maybe you guys are familiar with some of these. There's Property Brothers. This old house, love it or list it, rehab addict, curb appeal, home time, design on a dime, fixer upper, flip or flop. I like that one. That's good. Trading places and house hunters, right? That's just a few of them. We are obsessed with our homes. Many people consider home they consider it the key piece of the American dream, is home ownership. And so God has chosen to speak about two builders and two types of homes. Now, we're all home builders. Even if you're a renter, you're a home builder, right? You're building a life. You're building a spiritual life and spiritual foundation. We're all doing that. We desire strong, nice homes. But we also desire a strong spiritual home, a strong spiritual foundation. Maybe a legacy is what we desire. We desire a life well built, for sure. So let's read in Matthew now and see what Jesus has to say about this part of our lives that transcends culture, it transcends time, it transcends history, and gets at the core of who we are. Matthew 7, 24 and 27 says, "Everyone who hears these words of mine and does them is like a wise man who built his house on rock. The rain fell, the flood came, and the winds beat against that house. But it did not collapse because it had been founded on rock. Now, everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came, the flood came, and the winds beat against that house, and it collapsed. And it was utterly destroyed." Now, I don't know about any of you. Do any of you kind of read through Scripture and pass it by too quick? I mean, you read it and you say something. I'm tempted to do that sometimes. I'll read it and I'll say, oh, he's talking about two foundations. He's talking about Christians and non-Christians, right? I'm a Christian, so I'm good. I'm on the rock. And so I move on to the next one. And so we can miss a lot of richness in the Bible if we do that, if we go through things too quickly. Because this is not primarily about salvation. This message, this last parable that he told, is a warning. It's a warning about what we do with what we hear. And that brings us to our first point. If you're following along, you're going to fill in your blank. It says, if we desire a strong foundation, we need the discipline of doing. Okay, I told you there's going to be a lot of D's. We need the discipline of doing if we desire a strong foundation. Some of you that have been around for a while, you may remember in the original building over there, there was two stones as you walked in the entrance on the left and right of the doors. One said Friendship Baptist Church. It was the original one that was in there. It was built into the brick. And then there was another one, and it had James 1:22. It had kind of a founding principle or scripture from Friendship Baptist Church. And we kept that as the church, as Friendship Church kind of was rebuilt here. We kept that as a founding principle because it's key to what we believe and it speaks to this. But let's look at James 1:22. It says, "Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourself. Do what it says." Don't fool yourself. I don't know about any of you. I don't know if you like to fool yourselves. Do any of you like to put a kick me sign on the back and walk around, you know? Or my favorite, you tap your shoulder and turn around, nobody's there, right? We don't like to fool ourselves and trick ourselves. But God says that's what we're doing. If we're listening to the word, but it's not changing our life, okay? If things aren't changing our life. Now, it does take discipline to hear God's word, right? It took discipline for us to get up and come to church this morning, especially you first service folks. Good job, right? That takes even more discipline, right? It takes discipline to maybe join a small group and commit to going to that. It takes discipline to read our Bible. Those things take discipline. But don't miss this. God says it's not about the knowledge that we gain there, right? Don't miss this. It's not about being informed. It's about being transformed. It's not about being informed. It's about being transformed. Let's think about that again in Matthew. What does it say? Does it say, everyone who hears these words of mine and fills in the blank is like a wise man? No. Everyone who hears these words of mine highlights it in their Bible, that makes them a wise man, right? No. What's he saying there? Everyone who hears these words of mine and agrees with it. Amen, brother. Preach it. I agree with that. That makes us wise, right? No, it's not what he's saying. How about everyone who hears these words of mine and retweets them? Or everyone who hears these words of mine and memorizes them. That's a good one, right? Now, those are great things. Those are wise things to do. But God says it can't stop there. Jesus says it has to go beyond that. There's two types of people. And either they do something, they go out from that place and they change their behavior. From that, or they don't. Now notice, it doesn't say that the fool didn't get a house. He designed it. He planned it. He built it. He lived in it for a while. I kind of imagine, you know, it actually may have been a nicer house. People may have walked by and seen that house and be like, look at that. He spent all his time and energy making this nice, beautiful house. And he may have said, wow, that place is great. All the sand, beachfront property, what a great house he has. And the wise man's may have been a little more humble back there. That's just me. I'm just kind of imagining there, using my imagination. But he did get the house. He built a structure. People could see that. It may have been admired, okay, but it wasn't strong. And that brings us to our next point, which is if we desire a well-built life, we need the discipline of digging. If we desire a well-built life, we need the discipline of digging. Luke 6, 47, 49, okay, it's just the same story told by a different author, so a little bit different words. It says, everyone who comes to me and listens to my words and puts them into practice, I'll show you what he's like. He's like a man building a house who dug down deep. I love that for two reasons. First of all, it uses the D's, right? That's great for D-Day. It dug down deep. But that really gets to what we're talking about, digging down deep. Okay, he dug down deep and laid the foundation on bedrock. When a flood came, the river burst against that house, but it could not shake it because it had been well built. But the person who hears and does not put my words into practice is like a man who built his house on the ground without a foundation. When the river burst against that house, it collapsed immediately, and it was utterly destroyed. Now, just to make a point here, this is my prop, okay? I know it's not that impressive. For those that were here last week, Josh Miller did a fantastic job. He was able to turn all the lights out in here. We've never done that before. Blank the screens. He preached like half the sermon in the dark. It was awesome. It was really cool. I felt some pressure to try to compete with that, and I thought I had a good idea. I'm like, when we have the storms, we could do that kind of Disney 3D kind of deal. We have the rumbling of the subwoofers. We have some fans blowing on you guys, and I really hope to arm the guys back in the sound booth with like water blasters. And just, you know, hose you guys down, just, you know, squirt you and everything as we're talking about the storms coming. I couldn't get buy-in on that idea for some reason. Once again, it's ideas like that, while I probably won't be asked to speak again. But I digress. When I worked summers in college, I worked for a general contractor. And we would build these large commercial buildings, significantly larger than this. We had a lot of work that went into the foundation. You know, there was soil samples and surveys. There was testing. There was equipment that came out. And we would start digging, you know, with all this heavy equipment, digging these big ditches for the foundation. Now, many of you know this, but some may not. The foundation wall of large buildings like this does not just go down, does not just go down deep. It sits on a footer, okay? That footer is the most important part. As we get down and dig down there, you pour this concrete really deep and really wide. Tons and tons of concrete gets poured down there, reinforced concrete. Then the foundation wall is set on top of that, and then they build that up, and then the slab is poured, and then things go up really quick. Now, I can imagine people, when I work there, driving by each day, and seeing the equipment and seeing people out there working and guys like me just digging with a shovel like this and thinking, what is going on there? I've been driving by for like weeks and nothing is happening. It's like driving down Worcestersville here or down on I-65. What's happening? I don't see anything changing, right? That's what I could see people doing. The truth is we were doing the most important work, okay? Once that foundation is in place, you may have noticed that with this building, things go up really quickly. The walls, the roof, everything that can go very, very fast once that foundation is done. But what I've learned from this is that strength comes mostly from what is not seen, okay? Strength comes mostly from what is not seen. It's the work, it's the energy that got put into building that foundation. All that work, those weeks of digging, a lot of cost, a lot of expense into doing that. And that those effort and materials. And that's what it is with our lives, many ways. Strength comes a lot of times from what's not seen, from people don't have there. A lot of times we want to take the easy path, right? We want less struggle. We want to get the nice facade. We want to get the pretty house, the Christian life, the spiritual, strong spiritual house. But we don't want to do the work involved in digging down deep because that's hard work. It costs something. It costs something, and people may not even be able to see it. And yet, that's what Christ is calling us to do. Now, the fool, he picked the sand. Why did he build on sand? Because sand's, it's easy. It's easy to move around and manipulate. You can kick it. You can do whatever you want, and it's easy to build on that. He wanted less work. And sometimes in our life, we want that. We want a shortcut to holiness. We want the nice spiritual life, but we don't want to do the work involved in it. And that takes discipline. But it's important that we do dig down deeper. Now, this reminds me of a few years ago. We were in Jacksonville and at the beach, and my kids had built a castle, sandcastle, down by the water, right? And they got this fantastic thing put together and decided, they pronounced, it's going to endure forever, right? This castle is fantastic. We want it to last forever. And so they watched it, and of course, you know what happened. Pretty soon the tide started coming up, and the waves started lapping at the sandcastle walls, and it started to disintegrate. And they started panicking and doing some work to try to save it. And I'll credit my oldest daughter, Naomi. She's kind of the supervisor. She took charge, and she decided the best way to handle this was to take my second and third, Miriam and Simeon, and have them sacrifice their bodies to the waves. So she lay down and take the brunt of the force. That's what she was doing. We actually have a picture of here of some of that going on. So there they are. They don't know what's going on, but it's clearly not working. You can see the waves are going to keep coming. It's going to keep coming up on them, right? So this leads us, before I get to that, I don't want to skip this. As we're talking about the rock, okay, it is clear we are talking about Jesus Christ. All through the Bible, God mentions himself as a solid, as a firm foundation, as a solid rock, as the cornerstone. God is always saying you need to base yourself on something solid, on me. And in Psalm 62:2, it says, truly he is my rock and my salvation. He is my fortress, and I will never be shaken. Okay, if we want that stable life, that firm foundation, we need to be based on that rock that is definite, that is God. Okay. Now I want to point out something else. Sometimes we're digging and there's a different kind of rock, right? If you're in the Midwest here and you're digging, I think Pastor Dustin had said he was digging a fire pit, or if you're digging posts, holes for your fence or a deck or anything, and you start digging very far at all, what are you gonna hit? You're gonna hit a rock. And is it going to be a little rock? No, right? It can never be the little stone pebble things that you find everywhere. It's a big rock. And we hit that in our life sometimes, a different kind of rock. And what that rock is that can be some teachings of Christ that are hard, that we don't like. Now, when we hit those things in our yard, sometimes we may be tempted to go around those, or maybe let's just move the post over here. That'll work. We'll do that. We kind of move around it because it's so much work to remove that rock. Now imagine if we were in those commercial buildings building that foundation and we hit a large rock and we're like, this takes us off our schedule. This is not where we plan to be. It's too hard. We're going to step over this rock or root or whatever this thing is, and we're just going to keep building our foundation over here. Okay, that is going to create a weakness in our foundation. And sometimes in our lives, that's what we're like. We're coming along and we're building that foundation on Christ. And God, I love what you say. I'm good with the Beatitudes, and I'm good with maybe what you say about humility, and I like what you say, about this. And then we hit a rock, something for our life. Maybe it's about what God says about marriage and divorce. Maybe it's about what God says about drugs or alcohol or something controlling our life. Maybe it's about anger. Maybe it's about worry. Maybe it's about pornography or something that we let into our eyes and the entertainment we allow into our lives. We hit a stone that when we hit it, we say, that's too much. That's too much work. I wasn't planning on that. I wasn't planning on dealing with that. So we step over it and we keep building our foundation. And what we've left is a weakness there in our life because we're not doing everything that God's asked us to do. And this is important because it takes us to our third point, which is if we desire an enduring faith, we must prepare for the discipline of disaster. If we desire an enduring faith, we must prepare for the discipline of disaster. I'm going to be a weatherman today. Why not? I mean, around here, it doesn't matter what you predict. Okay. I'm going to predict storms. I'm going to predict a 100% chance of storms. And I'm actually going to predict 100% chance of severe storms in our lives because God says those things are coming. And in the Bible, he says that in many places. For example, in Hebrews 12:11, it says, "No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on," notice not right away, "later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it." God says there's things going to be coming into our lives. There's storms that are coming that you should be prepared for, that you want a solid foundation for. And who we are is going to be determined how we go through these storms and what kind of foundation we have. Now, this reminds me of a story for Amy and I when we got married. And even before we were married, we talked about having kids. We really felt like God's called us both to be parents, strong desire to be parents. And we talked about having lots of kids. And so we got married, and we waited a little bit, right? We had those first 3 years of pure bliss, you know, heaven on earth. Nothing goes wrong. Yeah, some of you know what I'm talking about. That first 3 years, everything's perfect, right? And then we started to try to have kids. And, you know, we didn't have them. A couple months go by, 6 months, 9 months, a year. People are saying, don't worry. Start going to the doctor. Start having fertility treatments. Nothing's happening. A couple years, our foundations start getting tested on things. We actually end up joining an in vitro fertilization, program. And there's surgical procedures, there's shots, there's tears, there's prayers. God, you called us to this. Why are we not able to have kids? Finally, I'm condensing years down into a couple minutes here. Finally, it happens. We get pregnant. So excited. God, he's really bringing this true in our life. And we have a miscarriage. And we get pregnant again. And we have another miscarriage. And we get pregnant again. And we have another miscarriage. And our foundations were being tested. They were being tested really hard. And at some point we decided, God, we trust you with our life, and we decided he didn't want us to have kids naturally, so we started the adoption process. And as things sometimes happen with that, right after we started that, we got pregnant with our first child, Naomi. And by the way, Naomi, my oldest, she, if you like that story about Harry in the White House, that was from a book report she just happened to produce and read and give me a couple weeks ago. So if you like that, you can thank her for that content. I thought it fit perfectly as I was preparing for the message. But he blessed us with Naomi, and he blessed us with my second princess, Miriam, that's here, and my buddy, Simeon, he blessed us with, and Lydia. And I'll never forget when Lydia was born, we went to that, Amy was resting, and went to that wall in the hospital, the big glass wall where you look in, there's all these babies, and humans make strange, weird things in the weird, and none of the babies can see them at all, right? But I don't know what we're doing. We're just kind of doing weird things. Looking for Lydia, she's not there. And they say, oh, she's in the back with a nurse. And we go back. Again, she's not there. And go back a third time. They say, oh, she's been moved downstairs. I'll go check this out. Amy's resting. I go downstairs. They moved her to NICU, Neonatal Intensive Care Unit. And they said she had a lot of trouble breathing. I walk into the room. I've got my mask. Whoa, can't do that, can we? I learned something new today. Don't cover your face. Like, okay. So I covered with a mask across my face and the little thing that we put on, and I walk in, and nurses, and there's a few babies in there, and there's Lydia right in the middle of the room. And it looks like she's been in a horrible car accident. She had tubes in her nose and down her throat. She had things in her veins. She had sensors on her head, all over her body. She all her skin was exposed, and they had a heat lamp on her because they had all these sensors and so many things to watch her. And they let me go, and I'm talking to her. And as I'm talking to her and just kind of touching her there, and she has an episode, I see her clench and stop breathing. And I watch the oxygen go from her body because the baby's skin is so thin. I literally watch the kind of pink color drain, and her whole body goes gray. And it was the toughest part of my life, toughest moment. And alarms went off, and nurses came over and kind of pushed me aside. And I went out in the hall, and I cried out to God. And I could tell you at times like that, The storms of life are pushing hard. They were pushing hard on my foundations. It was pressing for a weakness. Does God love you? Is God in control? Is he really all powerful? Is he real? Is this really what he wants for you? Pushing hard on those foundations. And my wife and I will both tell you, both through that moment for me and through the kind of the long period of infertility and the things we went through there, that it is very, very important to have a strong foundation when those storms come. And that's what I want for all of us. Now, that's our story. Some of you have a harder story, right? And some of you may be dealing with things in maybe your marriage or with your kids, broken relationships, maybe with friends, right? We're dealing with different storms, and there's more storms that are maybe coming. But we can prepare a foundation that will see us through that. And that brings us to the moral of our story. There's a lot of D's here. Hold on, okay? The moral of the story is that discipline over desire determines our destiny. A lot of D's. You like that? Come on, D-Day. I like that. Discipline over desire determines our destiny. Our destiny is where we're going to end up after those storms of life crash into our life, okay? But it's not determined by our desire. The fool desired a house that was great. He had a facade. He actually had one that he thought perhaps was nice. But the foundation is going to determine where we end up, and that comes through the discipline of doing and digging and being prepared for disaster. Now, some of you today may be saying, Don, I realize today my foundation isn't even on Christ. It's not on the solid rock, okay? And I need to tear down my building and build a new one on that and become saved. And if that's you today, I encourage you to talk to myself or one of the other elders after the message. Some others may be saying, Don, I built my house on Christ. I'm Christian, but I focus so much on the walls, on the looks, on maybe the external thing that people see, that I realize I don't have a foundation. I haven't really dug deep and been doing the things that God has asked me to do. I come to church and then I leave and it never changes my life. I hear things and I go away and nothing changes in my life. And this is the warning for all of us today, if that's the case. And then some of us, you might say, Don, I built that on that solid rock. I dug deep. I've got that foundation. But I remember a while ago I hit something. I hit a rock. Maybe it was sin in my life somewhere. And it was too much work. I just said, that's the way I am. That's just something about me. I don't want to deal with it. It's too hard, too much energy, too much. It takes too much to dig that out. And I need to go back today. I need to do some remediation work in my life and on my foundation and dig that sin out and root that out and have a foundation that's fully on Jesus Christ. So as we close, I'm just going to reiterate, Jesus ended his greatest sermon talking about as a warning, saying we've got to be doers. Let's not deceive ourselves, friends. Don't deceive ourselves by walking out and not letting things we hear actually change our life and transform us. But let's be doers. On this D-Day, we'll call it Decision Day. What do we need to do to make that foundation strong? Will you pray with me? God, we come to you today. We're thankful for your word. We thank you for salvation. We thank you for all that you do in our lives. And today, as we look at this story, this parable that you told, that's key to us. It's key about, talks about our home, something so dear to our hearts. And you've told us that we need to be wary. We need to be alert. We need to be looking at what our foundation is made of. Are we just hearing things and going away? Or is it changing us? God, help us not to be like that. Help us not to be merely listening to the word, just hearing the word. But I ask that everything we hear, all the stories, as we read, as we go to Bible studies and small groups and whatever it is, that we leave and don't let Satan just kind of take that away and let us move on with our lives, God. Help it to dig down deep into our lives, into our hearts, and to change us from the inside. God, it's our hearts that you're after. And it's our hearts, if our hearts are changed, we will be doers because we want to do what you've shown us to do. And so that's my prayer for all of us here today, God. Capture our hearts. Help us to have the disciplines needed to have that firm foundation. And I pray this in your name. Amen.